Some people hate their mothers. Others hate their fathers or their siblings. Some hate people of color. Others hate people lacking in color. One gets enraged at someone who cuts him off in traffic. Cyclists and motorists and pedestrians, oh my. Many others get furious at what's posted online and respond in that way. Some see red in an umpire when he blows a strike call in a crucial game costing a run. Some people hate immigrants. Others hate their bosses, their in-laws. People hate Muslims and Jews. Name your religion. Sally hates Harry, but not really. Really, she loves Harry. The educated, the uneducated, the traditionalists, the liberals, the gays, the straights, the rich, the poor, the homeless, the stranger. Everybody seems to hate somebody. Do some soul searching this morning with me, if you will. Do you have, or can you make, a litany of hatred? Whom do you hate? Against whom do you nurture anger? Whom do you complain about? The scriptures today try to engage us in that sensitive spot, in that difficult struggle for all of us, because it holds us to a higher standard, which sometimes doesn't seem to make sense at all to us, or at least is very, very difficult. Sirach puts it this way: wrath and anger are hateful things, yet the sinner hugs them tight. That's an easy image to remember. I don't want to be angry with this person, but by golly, I have a right to be. Could anyone nourish anger against another and expect healing from the Lord? Anger is a powerful force. It comes upon us like a storm for which we are not prepared, takes us by surprise sometimes, overwhelms us at times, moves us to action, confuses our thoughts, chains us up. But let me quote a few wiser people. The first two experienced apartheid in South Africa. The first is Nelson Mandela. He wrote, and you can find this in the bulletin, on the bulletin cover today, so you can take it home and just meditate on it. And as I walked out of the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew that if I didn't leave bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison. And then Alan Payton. There is a hard law. When an injury is done to us, we never recover until we forgive. And then, of course, there's Jesus. Unless you forgive your brother or sister from the heart, unless you forgive 77 times, which I assume doesn't mean it's okay on the 78th time not to forgive. Let those words sink in and touch the wound. Seven seems a lot. 77 seems almost outrageous. To forgive somebody who has hurt me, done real damage perhaps to my body, my psyche, my reputation, my property. Forgive someone who has abused a child or murdered a loved one. How can the Lord expect that of us? Isn't that just asking us to condone terrible wrongdoing? We have a right to our anger, after all. Do you ever pray the famous prayer attributed to St. Francis of Assisi? Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that very few of us pray that from the heart. Very few of us are in a spiritual place that whoever wrote that prayer, whether it be Francis or someone in his tradition, whoever wrote that was in a particular spiritual place to be able to say that. Let this be. Let me be an instrument of your peace. Let me sow love where there is hatred. Let me sow healing where there is injury, darkness where there is light. That's a person, and hopefully we will all get there if we're not there, who knows that they belong to God. That we are the Lord's. We don't live for ourselves. We don't live by ourselves. If we're able to pray that prayer, if we're able to forgive one another, it's because something, someone much larger and wiser and loving and more compassionate than we are has taken hold of us, and we've let that happen. We can't do it on our own. Even forgiving ourselves, which is important, we can't do that unless God gives us permission. Unless we receive the gift of forgiveness, we can't even forgive ourselves. And doesn't the gospel today make you angry? The story about the wicked servant who had forgotten that he had just been forgiven. That's us. Forgotten that we were sinners and still are forgiven, and then we go out and treat others as if that had never happened. We'd never appropriated the fact that we got forgiven and we're supposed to pay it forward. It's an outrageous parable, but it discloses something in us, and so it's important to listen to, as hard as it is, because we belong to the Lord who is slow to anger, rich in kindness, kind, merciful. We live in that larger reality which takes us to places that seem impossible to go if we let ourselves go there. Move beyond the emotional response of the hurt to a faith response. Okay, that hurt. But I belong to God and I'm safe in that. And I'm not going to respond to evil with evil. It stays here. I'm going to overlook that fault. I'm going to move on. Who can do that unless they belong to God? Prayer and fasting for our enemies. Meditation that gives peace. God does give us help to move to that place. This is one of those places where we gather together in peace. Fellow sinners, remember that Jesus ate with sinners, with people who would deeply disappoint him and betray him. He ate with them. And then from the cross forgave them and all of us. Father, forgive them. Let that example, let those words sink in and break our hardened hearts now, today.